Greetings. I'm Matt Matthews, one of the pastors here at First Pres in Champaign, and I'm happy to welcome you to our media ministry. Join us in person. We're located at the intersection of Church and State Streets, adjacent to Westside Park in downtown Champaign. Our traditional worship service is at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning, and on most of those Sundays, we offer French translation. Our contemporary services on Sunday begin at 11:15 a.m. When you come to First Pres, what you'll find, what I hope you'll find, is a community of people who support each other and who are passionate about making a difference in our community and beyond. You'll find relevant teaching for children and adults. We have at least a dozen Bible studies and small groups, including pickleball. That's right, pickleball. Adult choir, a bell choir for all comers, and other programs and events designed to grow your faith and give you and me opportunities to serve. There's a place for you. I'm glad you tuned in. I'm going to sing a sermon for you today. It's too late for you to leave. You're stuck. You're stuck. Now, at the right note, I want the singers to be oohing and aahing. Here's your key. There we go. I have a song to sing for you that I wrote a long time ago about a friend, about a partner in ministry. And I didn't want to leave Jesus and Simon Peter and James and John at the side of the lake, Lake Gennesaret. I didn't want to leave too quickly, so we're going to go back to that text. So this is Luke 5, chapter verses 8 through 11. It's not the whole part of the story we read last week. Listen for the word of the Lord. But when Simon Peter saw that he'd caught all this fish, as Jesus had instructed him to do, Simon Peter fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." For Simon Peter and all who were with Jesus were amazed at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. Then Jesus said to Simon, Jesus says to us, "Do not be afraid, for now on you will be catching people." And when they had brought their boats to shore, the fishermen left everything and followed Jesus. This is the word of the Lord. Help me to pray. Come and fill our hearts with your peace. You alone, O Lord, are holy. Come and fill our hearts with your peace. Alleluia. I didn't want to rush away from the lake, and I want to tell you a story that happened by a creek, Sarah's Creek. If you've ever been to Yorktown and stood on the battlefield there where Cornwallis surrendered to Washington, Redoubt Number 9, as you look across the York River, you are looking into, you wouldn't necessarily know it, but you're looking into the mouth of Sarah's Creek. And the eastern branch of that creek, just around the point, is where Chester Brown lived. And it's where Brett Godfrey and his wife, Deb, and his sister, Jill, a friend from Savoy, Mark Ann Licker, and I gathered with Chester and Marietta, his wife, to have kind of a reunion. And I want to tell you about this reunion of old friends. You know, as I think of the friendship that was begun by that lake with Peter, James, and John, with Jesus, it was an invitation to discipleship, partnership. It was an invitation into a deepening friendship. I think of all of my friends who have nurtured me, whose friendship and whose model of friendship came from that meeting of Jesus with those fishermen. That friendship is a friendship that keeps giving. And those ties that bind us together from generation to generation are sacred indeed. So Chester Brown was one of those people who were part of the tapestry, part of the safety net, part of the family that raised me. Chester was the pastor of Hampton Baptist Church, a progressive church. They ordained women. And they believed, those crazy Baptists in Hampton, they believed that all people could be called by God, and when you're called by God, the whole community ought to do what you can do to support that person's call. They called that community, they called that church, Hampton Baptist Church. It wasn't my church. I was across Hampton Creek in Fox Hill, right near Back Bay, next to Kickatan High School, at Community Presbyterian Church. People at my church believed the same thing, and they raised me, and they loved me, and they corrected me. Harriet Chapel taught me Sunday school, and she's the one who spoke plainly and often about the love of Jesus Christ, about a friendship with this guy who was a carpenter and who was a 12-year-old boy at the temple and who was born in manger hay and who died on a cross and who healed people and who visited and who upset the authorities. And Harriet Chapel would say, who upset people like your parents. My parents were part of that family. They were part of the family that raised me, that nurtured me in the love of Jesus Christ, and that taught me about these holy friendships. But Chester Brown was always a friend at the periphery of my family. He dated my Aunt Alice after college, when Chester was the youth minister at Hampton Baptist Church. That didn't last, but my family always had a connection with Chester. Chester married Marietta, and he was the beloved pastor of Hampton Baptist Church for decades, for almost five. And my friend Brett Godfrey and his family, they worshiped at Hampton Baptist Church. Brett was a good friend, still is. He came here after we moved here. He and Mark Blodgett came and said, you know, you need to be welcome to the Midwest. We'd like to come spend the night with you and welcome you. And I said, sure. And Rachel said, what? We're not unpacked yet. Our arms were covered with cuts from boxes unloading stuff. We worked so hard to get ready for them to come to welcome us. We were exhausted by the time they came. We wanted them to come, but we didn't want them to come. You know that feeling? They sat over there. You met them. They welcomed us. Mark Blodgett, who has since died, I've told you about Mark. We grew up together, Mark and Brett and me and others. But Mark said when he got to our house, wow, everything is, you're moved in. He was a military kid, and his dad, he said, we lived in places for years, and we never unpacked. So when it came time to move, we would just move the boxes. Brett Godfrey was a friend growing up. He lived in Hampton. His father was the executive officer, the lieutenant commander of the USS San Francisco, a nuclear-powered submarine that was being built at the Newport News Dry Dock Company. We grew up there in Hampton, where to the left on the water, there was Fort Monroe, and to the right on the water, there was Newport News Point, and beyond that was the shipyard. And across the harbor was the Norfolk shipyard. All the ships and all the Navy fleet, the 7th Fleet, was there. Helicopters would fly around the harbor doing practice rescue missions, and people from all over the country ended up in Tidewater. Brett was one of those people. He'd come from the Navy base in Charleston. Before that, came from Connecticut. I was out riding my bicycle one day, and there was Jill Godfrey jogging down the Chesapeake Avenue. Jill was really pretty. This is being recorded, so maybe I shouldn't say it. But, you know, I was watching her jog, thinking, she's really lovely. But she's my friend's younger sister. I need to not look so hard. But I stopped, and I said, hey, Jill. And she said, Matt, my parents were killed yesterday. Bill Godfrey had been on a sort of a vacation business trip for the United States Navy. and in a bit of news that you wouldn't have heard about here, but every military community in this country and where there are American bases, they heard. Because the military community is a small community. You hear about this stuff. Because you've served with one another. And even though Hawaii is far away, people in Hawaii used to be stationed in San Diego. They used to be stationed in Norfolk and Little Creek. They've been to Fort Eustace and Langley Field. Brett's dad and mom were on a business/pleasure trip, and they were choppering from Puerto Rico to St. Croix. And the chopper went down. Weeks later, Brett was given his father's San Francisco, what's the baseball team?
Giants,
thank you. That was the only thing that was recovered from the chopper. Jill said to me, "My parents were killed yesterday." I was 15 years old, I was almost 16. And I didn't know what to say. So I said, "I'm sorry. Have a good day." And I drove off and she jogged off. She was still in shock, and I was too, of course. Later, an hour later, a neighbor, an older girl in high school, came to my house and talked with my mother. My mother called me into the kitchen. And I knew why Beth was there. Beth was telling me that Brett's parents had died, but I already knew. And she said, "You need to come to the Godfrey's house." Did I tell you I was 15 years old? I needed to come to the Godfrey's house to do what? Mrs. Godfrey would make the dough for the pizza, and she'd put it in a plastic bag, and wherever we teenagers went that Friday night, we always went with her dough. And we'd roll it out and we'd make pizzas. I needed to go to Brett's house to do what? Mrs. Godfrey wasn't going to be there making pizza. Mr. Godfrey was always sort of not always present. I mean, he was there, of course, but I didn't see him very often. He was a runner, so when he was at home, he would go running. But, you know, building a nuclear-powered submarine when you're the executive officer means that you spend a lot of hours in the shipyard with engineers and with the brass in Washington. Rickover was an acquaintance of his. Rickover hired Bill Godfrey. What was I supposed to do at the Godfrey's house? Beth didn't come for my parents to go to the Godfrey's house. And she didn't ask me to bring my parents. My parents weren't needed. But I was. Did I tell you I was 15 years old? I went over to Brett's house. I went over to his house for the next several days. I went over when Paige came from a weekend camp. They went to get her in a limousine. And when she got upstairs and Chester Brown, her pastor, and the Navy chaplain assigned to that gruesome duty told her about her parents, her screams filled the neighborhood. And I could hear her from my house as we walked home that June night. I would go to Chester's, to Brett's house, and Chester was always there, eyes sunk deep in his head, red, you know, sort of raccoon eyes. Chester was always there with the youth director, with other adults. People were bringing in and out food. The Navy brass were coming over, and really, I just kept noticing black limousines. And these boys would come. They were boys. They were 17, 18, 19 years old. They were Bill Godfrey's kids from the submarine. And they would come in and sit around the table and just weep. And then they would get up and they would go, they would leave. They didn't know what to say. Nobody knew what to say. But church people were there feeding the family, loving the family. Carrie Frommel, a friend, was at Brett's place every morning to help him deliver the papers, the Daily Press, Times Herald. And this is after Carrie had gone out at 3 a.m. to deliver his papers. He'd come and help Brett with his. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a service I could offer. I'm describing friendships to you. I'm describing how the church came together and lifted this family. This transcended my understanding at the time. I did not know what was happening. But you know what was happening because you have been a part of such things. You've been a part of great celebrations and graduations and baptisms and bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs. And you've been a part of tragic losses in the community where old people you love have died and where young people were killed somehow. You've been a part of the good news and the bad news of this town. You know what it's like to gather. I did not know. And I did not know what to do. On one of these afternoons, Chester Brown was standing in the front yard with other men. And they were saying somber things, I suppose. And I knew Chester Brown. You know, I grew up knowing Chester Brown. I went to Chester and I said, "Chester, what should I do?" And he said, "Just be Brett's friend." And I didn't have the presence of mind to ask, "Well, how am I supposed to do that?" But my hunch is he would have said, "You know, friends know." And so I've spent my life attempting to be Brett's friend. And he's been my friend. And we've kept up with one another. And it's because of Chester Brown that I dare to be your pastor. It's because of the way he loved that family. It's because of the way he stood by. Dave, you know what I'm talking about. That I began to feel called to do that too. To come into situations where I didn't know what to say. To come into situations where there was really nothing to be done except to be, to sit, to wait, to pray. So it's because of Chester on that front lawn, it's because of Louis Andrews and all of his boring sermons when I was growing up, falling asleep during the sermons, but the way he would stand by us at youth group on Sunday nights. Eat pizza with us, play ping pong with us. It's because of these men. It's because of my parents. It's because of these friends of Jesus Christ that I knew that I was called to do that too, as we all are. And the seminary began to call, and I began to listen. Brett is an athlete. And he's been blessed with a really cruddy body. He has eye problems and he has some arthritis problems. And so he was out for a long bike ride. He lives in he lived in Minneapolis, St. Paul at the time. He was that's our heat. I hope it's not the Godfrey family. He was on for one of these long bike rides through the many trails they have in St. Paul. And he didn't feel very well, so he stopped. And he sat down. Another biker came by and stopped and said, "You don't look so good." And Brett said, "I don't feel so good. I think I'm going to lie down." And the guy said, "I think I'm going to call an ambulance." And so he did. And when Brett was being wheeled into the heart catheterization lab, the surgeon said, "You're having a heart attack right now." And he says, "I'm a young man." He says, "Well, tell that to your heart." And they were placing a stent. Talking, you know, Brett was talking with them while this was happening. And the doctor said, she said, "If you weren't here, you would be on that bike trail and you probably would not survive. This is a very serious thing, but we're fixing it." And they did fix it. That was in the winter, one of the nicest days in winter when he went on that ride. Brett is a motorcycle rider, so at the end of school, he always goes on a big motorcycle ride. And the doctor said, "I'm not sure you can go on that." But Brett kept pushing, and finally, the doc says, "Okay, you're free to go." So if school ends on June 15th at 1 o'clock, Brett's on his motorcycle on June 15th at 2 o'clock, heading to Seattle or heading to New Orleans, or in this case, as he's done before, heading to Chester Brown's house on Sarah's Creek in Gloucester, Virginia, right across the York River from readout number 9 in Yorktown. And because this was his first major trip, and because riding a motorcycle cross-country is kind of dangerous under every circumstance, we were all a little concerned. I said, Brett, why don't you come by my house on the way back? And then I said, Brett, that's too much work. Why don't I meet you there at Chester's house? I said, sure. And Deb called me and said, Matt, I don't really want Brett traveling alone, so I'm going to go fly into Norfolk and go to Chester's house. You don't mind? He said, no, I don't mind. And Jill from Cary, North Carolina said, I'm going to meet you there, Brett. And Mark Anlicker in Savoy, after Brett's parents died, he ended up in Champaign, where his uncle was a professor at U of I. It's a small world, isn't it, that I'm standing in the pulpit? First Presbyterian Church in Champaign. So Mark says, swing by Savoy, I'm going to ride with you. And so Brett, who usually travels alone in the summer, had a whole posse of people. And we met at Sarah's Creek. He survived the ride there. He survived the ride back. Brett is still surviving. He's alive and quite well. But we met at Sarah's Creek because we didn't want him to be alone, and because we almost lost him that winter, and because, well, we remembered that summer when his parents died and how Chester stood by us. And we just wanted to gather together, and we did. 37 years later, we gathered together. So what I've told you in a sort of stammering way is a story about holy friendship. Chester Brown said, if you want to help Brett, just be his friend. And it seems to me that is the Christian calling, to attempt by God's grace to be one another's friends. To love one another for sure, and if possible, to like one another. To be friends. Jesus said to Peter and James and John, come, follow me. I'll make you fishers of people. We'll weave together this tapestry of friendship, and we'll pass it on from generation to generation. And they did. They have. They are now through us, through our gifts of holy friendship. So, here's a song about that day that I hope I can sing for you. Thank you for being a friend, by the way. Thank you for befriending me and Rachel. I'm grateful for the way you are friends with one another. I'm grateful for the friendships we're making. I'm grateful that on next Sunday afternoon we get to invite friends we haven't met yet who really love John McCutcheon's music. I'm grateful we get to be the Church of Jesus Christ, passing along the friendship that Jesus first shared with Peter, James, and John. Chester Brown and his lovely Marietta opened their hearts and their old Virginia home. The years have grown, life has been a great adventure. We grew up here long ago. When we were kids, he had been our pastor. We raised some hell on those Saturday nights. Then came the news. We were shattered by disaster. 15 years old, we didn't know what to do. Now here we are together on Sarah's Creek. 37 years later, and that watermelon's sweet. Our laughter rises and the water fills our eyes. Memories, they float like fireflies on Sarah's Creek. Brett became a teacher And he married a teacher too. His kids are all grown up, mine are too. I became a preacher, and I do the best that I can. I tell our friends about Chester Brown as he took us by the hand. On that summer night long ago, when it all went down, neighbors all came out, church people, they gathered around. We hardly had the strength to stand. We didn't know what to say. We all looked to Chester Brown, who said, "Why don't we pray?" Now here we are together on Sarah's Creek, 37 years later, and that watermelon's sweet. Our laughter rises and the water fills our eyes. Memories, they float like fireflies on Sarah's Creek. Chester Brown, he loves that water. He loosens up his tie, tells us the history of his neighbors and these tides. Gracious Marietta, she pours the cups of tea. I think I hear angel wing. I think I see eternity. Now here we are together, Sarah's Creek, 37 years later, and that watermelon's sweet. Our laughter rises and the water fills our eyes. Memories, they float like fireflies on Sarah's Creek. Amen.
Thank you for joining this podcast of First Presbyterian Church Champaign. Visit us at our campus at the intersection of Church and State Streets in downtown Champaign. And for more information, visit us online at www.firstpres.church. Have a great week.